You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Thursday, February 26, 2026. You go your way, I'll go mine. Why accounting methods matter? No, seriously, you gotta hear this. Published by Nicholas Caccioni. As E&Ps release a flood of year-end results, investors, analysts, and industry observers scrutinize annual reports to compare the performance of upstream oil and gas companies. Yet, despite operating in the same shale basins, drilling similar wells, and facing the same commodity price environment, some producers report markedly different financial results that are often not driven by geology, operational execution, or management strategy. Instead, they stem from accounting methodology, specifically from whether a company uses the full cost, or FC, or successful efforts, or SE, method to account for its oil and gas properties. In today's RBN blog, we explain why this seemingly mundane topic really matters. Reading about accounting methods may not seem super exciting, but it's not that much different than filing taxes. Every spring, millions of us sit down with our W-2s, and yet two households earning almost identical money can report far different taxable income because of accounting rules. Exactly what happens with upstream oil and gas companies, too. These rules are essential to understanding how oil and gas producers are doing financially and otherwise. So, here it goes. Although the FC and SE approaches are permitted under U.S. Generally Accepted Accounting Principles, or GAAP, they reflect fundamentally different philosophies about how exploration successes and failures should be recognized in financial statements. These differences influence reported earnings, asset values, depreciation and depletion rates, impairment behavior, and, ultimately, how companies are perceived by the market. For decades, FC and SE accounting methodologies were viewed largely through the lens of conventional exploration. In that pre-shale era, dry holes were common, exploration risk was high, and accounting methodology played a major role in determining financial results. FC tended to smooth results by spreading failures across large cost pools, while SE forced companies to recognize losses immediately. The rise of large-scale shale development changed that dynamic. Modern shale drilling is more repeatable, more data-driven, and far less exposed to traditional exploration risk. As a result, many market participants assume that the differences between FC and SE have become less relevant. That assumption is only partly correct. While shale has reduced the importance of classic dry hole risk, it has not eliminated the economic and analytical consequences of accounting choice. Instead, the battleground has shifted. Today, the most important differences between FC and SE appear in impairment timing, depreciation profiles, reserve revisions, and the way capital costs are embedded in balance sheets over time. Wake up! We're just getting to the good stuff. However, it is important to recognize that despite whichever accounting methodology a company subscribes to, cash flow and cash flow-related metrics will still tell the economic truth about a company's financial fortunes. Accounting history. To understand why FC and SE accounting still matter today, it is necessary to briefly revisit the environment in which these methods were developed. Both emerged in an era when upstream oil and gas exploration was fundamentally different from the manufacturing-style drilling programs that dominate today's shale basins. From the 1950s through most of the 1990s, much of the industry's capital was devoted to high-risk, high-cost exploration. Companies routinely drilled wildcat wells in frontier basins, offshore environments, and geologically complex regions with limited subsurface data. In addition, seismic quality was rudimentary by modern standards. As a result, failure rates were high. In many basins, a significant portion of exploratory wells encountered no commercial hydrocarbons. A single unsuccessful well could cost tens of millions of dollars and generate no reserves. Exploration outcomes were often binary. Either a discovery was made, or the entire investment was lost. In this environment, how companies accounted for exploration costs had a substantial impact on reported financial performance. Against that backdrop, two distinct accounting philosophies emerged. Under the SE method, companies are required to expense the costs of unsuccessful exploratory activities as they occur. Only expenditures associated with proved reserves and productive assets are capitalized. This approach emphasizes project-level accountability and rapid recognition of failure. Poor exploration results translate quickly into lower earnings. Supporters of SE argue that it provides a more transparent and conservative view of financial performance. By recognizing losses promptly, it prevents companies from carrying uneconomic investments on their balance sheets and forces management teams to confront unsuccessful strategies. FC accounting adopts a different perspective. Rather than evaluating projects individually, it treats exploration as a portfolio activity. Under this method, most exploration and development costs are capitalized and accumulated in large cost pools, typically organized by country. Dry holes, abandoned prospects, and unsuccessful acreage positions are viewed as unavoidable components of the exploration process, sort of like gold rush prospectors spending a lot of days panning for gold without success before hitting the jackpot. Proponents of FC argue that this approach better reflects the long-term economics of resource development. Individual failures are expected to be offset by future discoveries, and capitalizing costs smooths earnings over time. In their view, expensing dry holes immediately creates excessive volatility that does not reflect underlying business value. During the 1960s and 1970s, there was intense debate in the oil and gas industry over which approach better represented economic reality. Large integrated oil companies generally favored SE, while smaller independent producers, some of them old-school wildcatters, often preferred FC. After years of controversy, U.S. regulators ultimately permitted both methods under GAAP, provided that companies applied them consistently and disclosed their policies clearly. The Securities and Exchange Commission, or the SEC, also introduced the full cost ceiling test to limit excessive asset capitalization under FC accounting. More on that in a minute. This compromise reflected the industry's diversity of business models. Companies that were focused on large-scale, diversified exploration programs gravitated toward SE. Smaller, exploration-oriented firms with limited capital bases often preferred FC, which reduced short-term earnings volatility and facilitated access to financing. This framework remained largely intact until the rapid expansion of shale development fundamentally altered the industry's risk profile. Shale changes. The rapid expansion of shale development since the turn of the century fundamentally transformed the risk profile of the upstream oil and gas industry. Beginning in the early 2000s and accelerating after 2010, advances in horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing shifted large portions of U.S. production away from conventional exploration and toward repeatable, manufacturing-style development. In major basins such as the Permian, Eagle Ford, Bakken, Marcellus, and Haynesville, operators target laterally extensive source rocks with known hydrocarbon content. Once a play is delineated, drilling becomes highly standardized. As a result, shale drilling is largely developmental. Another defining feature of shale development is the extraordinary density of subsurface information. This data-rich environment enables increasingly precise reservoir characterization. Geologic uncertainty has been substantially reduced in core areas, allowing operators to forecast well performance with greater confidence. In the shale era, impairment recognition has become one of the most important areas of divergence between the FC and SE strategies. SE companies such as EOG Resources, ConocoPhillips, and Civitas Resources, now merged with SM Energy, evaluate impairment at the field or project level. When expected future cash flows from a specific asset fall below its carrying value, a write-down is recorded. For example, Murphy recorded a pre-tax impairment totaling $115 million in Q3 2025 on the operated Dalmatian asset in the Gulf of Mexico due to reserve reductions in the quarter, as certain future projects in the field were less competitive for capital allocation. By contrast, FC companies, such as Talos Energy, Northern Oil and Gas, and W&T Offshore, evaluate impairment at the cost pool level using a ceiling test analysis. A ceiling test write-down occurs when a FC company's net capitalized oil and gas costs exceed the present value of its proved reserves, or PV10, requiring the excess to be written off immediately. These write-downs are often triggered by lower commodity prices or reserve revisions rather than changes in underlying operations. For example, driven by lower average oil prices, Northern Oil and Gas recorded a non-cash impairment charge of $318.7 million in Q3 2025 under the ceiling test of its full cost pool of oil and gas assets. Because costs are aggregated across broad portfolios, individual underperforming assets may not trigger write-downs until deterioration becomes widespread. Another important long-term consequence of accounting choice in shale-centered portfolios is its impact on net capitalized costs, i.e., the book value of a company's oil and gas reserves. Under FC accounting, legacy investments remain in the cost pool indefinitely unless impaired. SE tends to flush out failed outcomes more quickly, producing asset bases that more closely reflect current inventory quality. In mature shale plays, where core inventory is gradually depleted and development moves outward, this distinction becomes increasingly important. Companies with significant net capitalized costs may appear well capitalized while facing deteriorating drilling economics. You might want to take a look at Figure 1 in today's blog, which shows the 2024 net capitalized costs per barrel of oil equivalent, dollar per BOE, of oil and gas reserves plotted against the oil liquids content in the company's oil and gas reserves. As we mentioned in the previous paragraph, the net capitalized cost statistic is the book value of a company's oil and gas reserves. We plot it against the amount of liquids in a company's reserve mix to compare companies with similar reserve profiles. Because of this comparison, one interesting takeaway from this chart is that Diamondback Energy, generally regarded to be one of the most efficient investors among Permian Basin players in terms of finding and development costs, has one of the highest net capitalized cost among all the oil-weighted players, possibly showing the impact of FC accounting on its balance sheet. Despite the maturity of many onshore shale plays, exploration remains active in several areas such as the Deepwater Gulf off Louisiana and Texas, international frontier basins, emerging unconventional plays, new plays within existing basins, and underexplored onshore regions. These projects often require large upfront investments in seismic, leasing, and drilling, with no guarantee of commercial success. Individual wells can cost tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars, particularly in offshore environments. Unlike shale development, where drilling programs are largely repeatable, exploration in these settings remains inherently uncertain. About half of the nearly 40 companies we closely monitor have conventional oil and gas assets in their portfolios, including Murphy Oil, W&T Offshore, California Resources, Talos Energy, and Occidental Petroleum. Focus on cash flow. One final thing. Because accounting policy primarily affects the timing of expense recognition rather than underlying economics, cash flow remains the most reliable indicator of performance. Investors and analysts evaluating upstream companies should emphasize operating and free cash flow, reinvestment rates, finding and development, or F&D, costs, reserve replacement efficiency, payout ratios, and capital returns. These measures are less distorted by accounting treatment and more closely reflect economic reality. In Figure 2, we compare the FC and SE accounting treatments. In this example, the FC company posts a profit of $86 million compared to a $60 million profit for the SE company. This difference is due to the $30 million expensing of three unsuccessful wells for the SE company, and the $4 million in higher depreciation, depletion, and amortization, or DD&A, expenses for the FC company. Also note that cash flows for both companies are the same. While FC and SE accounting can materially affect reported earnings and asset values, neither method changes the business's underlying economics. Shale development narrowed the most visible historical differences between FC and SE by reducing traditional dry hole risk, but it did not eliminate the importance of accounting methodology. Instead, it shifted the battleground toward impairment timing, DD&A profiles, reserve revisions, and the accumulation of embedded capital on balance sheets. Now that we've introduced the accounting methods, we will augment our reporting of year-end reserve reconciliations in upcoming blogs to highlight their impact on individual company results. For investors and analysts, however, we want to reinforce a simple but critical principle. Accounting determines when results are recognized, but cash flow determines whether value is created. In the end, cash flow, not accounting methodology, is the only true measure of success or failure in the upstream oil and gas business. Most Likely You Go Your Way, and I'll Go Mine, was written by Bob Dylan and appears as the first song on side 3 of his 7th studio album, Blonde on Blonde. The song is about the end of a relationship. It was recorded at Columbia Studio B in Nashville and was released as the B-side to the single Leopard Skin Pillbox Hat. Released in April 1967, it went to number 81 on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles Chart. Artists such as Todd Rundgren, Patti LaBelle, and Hard Meat have covered the song. Personnel on the record were Bob Dylan, vocals, harmonica, Robbie Robertson, Wayne Moss, electric guitar, Al Cooper, organ, Pig Robbins, piano, Joe South bass, Charlie McCoy, trumpet, and Kenny Buttrey, drums. Blonde on Blonde was recorded between January and March 1966 at Columbia 7th Avenue in New York City and Columbia Studio B in Nashville. The double album was produced by Bob Johnston and released in June 1966. It went to number 9 on the Billboard 200 Albums chart and has been certified 2X Platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America. 5 singles were released from the LP. Bob Dylan, Robert Allen Zimmerman, is an American singer, songwriter, musician, artist, author, and actor. Considered one of the greatest songwriters of all time, his career spans close to 7 decades. After playing folk clubs and coffee houses in New York City in the early 1960s, the Minnesota native released his eponymous debut studio album on Columbia Records in March 1962. He has released 40 studio albums, 21 live albums, 7 soundtrack albums, 44 compilation albums, 24 EPs, and 105 singles. He has sold more than 125 million records worldwide. He has won 10 Grammy Awards, a Lifetime Achievement Grammy Award, a Golden Globe Award, is a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Songwriters Hall of Fame, has received Kennedy Center Honors, a Presidential Medal of Freedom, a Nobel Prize in Literature, and a Pulitzer Prize Special Citation. He still records and tours and will resume his Rough and Rowdy Ways World Tour in March.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.